We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it didn't take that long on you. Go dogs.
Man, it is not going to take that long at all. The dogs are who the dogs are. Welcome to the 100 Sanford Podcast. We are back. It is Lovelace. It is Foster. We got Graham Coffee getting ready to jump on soon. Foss, what is going on, man? It's been a couple weeks, brother. It's been a couple weeks.
What's up, dog?
Chilling.
Hey, we gonna have
last time you see it, you know, I shaved it, so yeah, I'm feeling.
He got the young face. You know, young Lovelace face.
Man, that's what my youngest said. He said, "Man, you look so young." I'm like, "Look, I'm trying to get like you. I'm trying to reverse the age, get back in the trenches, do my thing, you know, get an opportunity to get some of this money that the NIL is now giving. I got some eligibility."
They sure getting it. I tell you that much. Yeah, getting it.
Hey, man. Hey.
That stuff, man. We had the draft, some Bulldogs, you know, some realizing their dreams, you know.
Yeah, man.
You know, a lot of stuff been going on, man. It's coming. The season is coming, but it's just slow.
Man,
it's like,
this is like, you know,
it's like
outside
it's like,
of having a good baseball team to follow, it is a rough patch of time. I mean, you got the NBA finals. I mean, that it is what it
yeah,
is.
But I'm a Lakers fan, so we just got right now I'm hate watching.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But we do get to watch our guy Ant-Man, the Bulldog.
He's doing his thing, man.
He is a dog.
He's doing his thing.
He's playing like he wants to claim, the top spot. It's not far-fetched. You know, he's playing like a top five, three player in the NBA right now.
False. I think if he really locks in, I think if he gets rid of any distraction and he gets, you know, like a maniac in the gym like Kobe, little bit like Jordan,
mm-hmm.
he would be that dude.
Like there's nothing, like he doesn't lack anything. You just hope it doesn't regress. You know, because it happens with guys. He don't seem like the type. He seemed like the type that got some that dog in him. He wanna, like he said the other day, he wanna kill everything moving.
That's what I'm talking about. He's already halfway there. He's already halfway there with the Kobe style, the Jordan style. He's already halfway there.
He just takes care of his body.
Yeah.
He locks in the gym. You know, when I'm talking about the gym, I'm talking about the weight room and whatnot. The basketball part comes natural to him.
Yeah,
man. He locks in, keeps his body together like the greats, like Mike did, you know, Jordan did, you know what I mean? I mean Kobe.
Yeah.
The sky's the limit, really. What is the guy like?
He doesn't lack any. You know, coming out of Georgia, I thought he lacked a consistent jumper.
Yeah,
he could still be a little streaky, but when he turns it on, he got that type of ability that when he knows his jumper's not working and it's not cream,
he does everything else.
Like
he's
the
playing
great
defense. He's playing defense. He's getting blocks. He's getting steals. He's, you know, he's very vocal.
You know,
his teammates locked in.
And just rest on one thing. He just switches gears, becomes a. Oh, there we go. Thought we lost connection or something.
Yeah, you were a little choppy.
Oh, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Make sure my connection's correct. There we go. I'm there. Am I back now?
Yeah, you're good.
All right.
Man, this he's exciting to watch. Do they play tonight? I don't know. I'm not sure.
You know what? I haven't even checked. I've been so busy with work.
No, they probably don't play tonight. I doubt it because they just finished the series.
Right.
So they probably got a few more days left.
For sure.
Yeah, he's been fun to watch. My Braves are good as usual for the last, you know, I don't know how many years. They've been pretty good. So they still, so I enjoyed watching them. Been out to the ballpark a couple times.
You just throwing salt in my wound, huh?
Hey, man. Hey, they need Dusty.
Man, look.
They need
the Braves are like that.
It is what it is. They need Dusty.
Yeah.
You Astros fan, right?
No. First, I'm a Pirates fan. So you that's what I'm saying. So you know how bad I've been.
Yeah.
And even when they're doing good, man, even when they're supposed to be okay.
The big fella back, though.
Who's that?
Shortstop.
He's not hitting, though. That's the problem. The whole offseason, they kept saying that they're going to have a better hitting team, and the pitching may be a little sketchy. It's actually the reverse. They got the pitching that's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and they can't hit the broad side of a barn, man. They can't do anything right now. And they got some dogs that are pitching. They got the young boy, Jared Jones, who they brought up as a rookie, and he's throwing nothing but 101 heat. They got Skeens, who's getting ready to come up from AAA. So that's going to be exciting to watch. But besides
that, Skeens, is that the
that's the kid from LSU that they drafted number one overall last year. And he just throws 8-9 strikeouts every game in AAA in three, four innings. He's like that. So, you know, but we'll see. We just got to get through this season, man. We got to get through. At least I do. I mean, like you already said, you got the Braves that's going to carry you through. I got to get through to August. I got to get through these dog days. But hey, before we go any further, man, make sure you follow the show. Make sure you, like us.
Subscribe. Repost.
Subscribe. I know it's like kind of like the slow period of the year, but you know what? We're about to really ramp up here.
And go back and watch the other stuff. We got some classic episodes, though. A lot of great guests. Go back and watch the other stuff.
Yeah, man. We got some classic stuff. We got the Champ Bailey classic. You got the Bamani Jones classic. You got a lot of stuff that's in the archives, man.
There's some stuff on there.
Graham Coffee.
What's up, fellas?
What's up, man?
What's good? What's good in the hood?
Man, just got back from Athens a couple nights ago we're on the other side of the draft in spring practice, which and the portal. So like we actually know who's going to be on the team now. That's good. But, it feels like we're at that midway point of the off season where you can kind of start projecting the season a little better, but like it's not close enough to get super excited yet. So trying to fill the time, man.
Yeah, man.
We were just talking about that. You know, I got the Braves can carry me to, August.
I feel you, man. I know. I was talking to somebody today about, I guess the Braves are doing like a UGA night on June 18th or something like that.
They typically do.
Might try to check that out. Yeah.
That'd be sweet.
I might try to come.
I might need to go
for that.
I haven't made one. Yeah, they have that. They do a few different schools. They even do a tech night. Yikes.
Ooh, how many people show up for that?
No. I think they do a Clemson maybe too.
Oh, do they? Yeah,
they do a few schools.
A lot of cousins there.
Georgia has the number one. Georgia has the number one prospect in
dude.
Yeah.
Okay, Foss. That's the only silver lining to the Pirates losing. That's the only silver lining. Just lose.
You think they're gonna finish that deep? That?
Oh man, please.
How does baseball draft?
How does please baseball, give
it does it go like every other draft? Like the worst teams pick.
I know they didn't finish. I don't know. That's a good.
There isn't a lottery, is it? There's not a lottery.
No.
If you finish last, you're probably gonna pick first.
Yes. So please let me finish last. Give me trouble.
Condon is. He is whacking the ball.
He's definitely getting busy with it.
He's 6'6".
He is insane, man.
Broken.
Like, yes. It's not even just
in 40 games. That's like over a home. That's a homer every other game.
One and a half more games.
Bro, he's batting .456 with a .563 on base percentage, a 1.088 slugging percentage, and he's got so in 78 hits, he's got 16 doubles and 30 home runs with 63 RBIs.
He's got 30 now?
Yeah, he's got 30. He got 30. He got his 30th last night, I think. Dude, he set the school record.
He's a walk-on.
He's a walk-on. What is it with walk-ons in Georgia, man? Stetson.
He's a freaking walk-on.
What might have to go put some like
you got a 6'6 walk-on slugger? Like what is it like what's how who missed on that?
Everybody.
I gotta go find somebody to make me a market on a Cass Jones Heisman finalist future or something, man. Make some real money here.
You can retire on that. What's the
40,000 to 1?
40,000 to 1.
$100 gonna pay me out $4 million.
And Graham, we already know that you get down with that, so I know you know the odds. If there's anybody knows odds, or something
Jones,
like that,
let me put my Cass Jones bet in.
I don't know about the. I mean, I do get down with that, but I don't know about the Cass Jones.
If Cass Jones is in the Heisman running, we're not. Well, I don't know. We could be doing great, but I wouldn't want to be in that position where he has to carry us.
Let's see what the Heisman odds are right now. Who is the favorite? I know Carson's got to be up in the top five.
He's probably in the top five.
Carson is the odds on favorite right now on FanDuel. He's +750. Quinn Ewers is +900. And then you got Dylan Gabriel, Will Howard, Nico, and Jalen Milroe after that.
It's pretty open. Howard.
Who's that?
He's the guy that was at Kansas State and transferred to Ohio State. But he can't really throw. I mean, he's a running quarterback, so I don't know. Heisman seems like a stretch.
Well, hey, man. Look, we just had – I know we talking, chit-chatting, talking about the dogs and baseball. We were actually talking about Ant-Man. We were talking about a little bit about everything before you got on, Graham. But let's talk about what just happened this past week. Yeah, the NFL draft. I mean, the dogs are in there, right? Mm-hmm. They actually did what they're supposed to do. They handled business when they were at Georgia. They get that opportunity to now go away from NIL into real payday. Big G knows all about that. George, what's your thoughts on the draft, man? I don't know. Did you watch it? I watch every second.
I watched a good bit of it. I think it went pretty much how we expected. I thought Brock might go earlier, but you know, still that's good range for a tight end at 13. I did not expect the Raiders. They drafted a highly rated tight end, I think, recently. But you can never have too many weapons, especially with their uncertainty at QB. It went how we thought it was. You know, Ladd was right at the edge of, you know, could have been a first round pick, you know. But he goes to the Chargers. Good pick for them. Kamara gets put in a great situation, man. With that front they have. Didn't they sign Danielle Hunter?
They did. Yeah.
And you got him, man. You got Will Anderson. Jeez Louise.
Yeah, man.
And you got Stingley on the other side.
Yes.
Who else did they sign?
Who, the Texans?
Who started for them opposite Stingley?
That was Nelson, but Nelson's no longer there. Nelson. Yeah. So that's why they went out and got Kamari. Oh, and they also got Jeff Okuda in free agency.
Yeah.
So Kamari he's got an opportunity to actually start. Right now they're looking at him at nickel. Yeah. But when you look at it, he's got a chance to start.
He's even tough. He's tough. Yeah. He can, you know, he can cover, you know. The knock was on his, you know, his speed, but nobody was really running past him deep. You know what I mean? And I think also if I'm, you know, when I was at Pro Day, I came to this conclusion that I think guys should, you know, it's kind of the opposite of when I came out. Plus, we ran on the track. But a lot of people didn't run at, you know, in Indy, because Indy was supposedly slow. It was this, that, and the other. I think it's the opposite now, at least for Georgia. I stood up. I was on that turf that whole day, Pro Day. It is ridiculously soft. Soft turf is bad for running.
Yeah.
Fast times. Like it's really soft. It's really soft. I could feel it when I was there. So like future guys, man, just run the Indy if you're able to. If you're healthy, if you're healthy and whatnot, just do it in Indy, because I can't see a situation where anybody runs faster at Georgia than they would in Indy. You know, it's just a slow surface. You know, I don't know if it's by design or just by happenstance, but so I don't think he is as slow as, I don't think he plays 4.6.
Point blank. No, I think that 40 time that came out of the Pro Day too, I'm pretty sure that there were some teams that were there that kind of, you know, leaked out through the media basically that they timed him faster than 4.6, that they had him like closer to 4.5, you know. But I mean with Lassiter and with Bullard for that matter, really, like I think it's one of those situations of turn on the tape. And like you said, he definitely plays faster than 4.6. And I think with those guys, you know, what I've heard over the last 4 or 5 days since the draft is, you know, there's a lot of recruits that were really impressed with seeing those guys go as high as they did, you know, because I think with Georgia and with Kirby, right? Like he wants all these kids to do well. He wants all of them to get paid. He wants all of them to be highly drafted, but he's also, you know, he's got to be honest about everybody in order to protect his program. And I think that with Lassiter and Bullard, you had two guys that loved football, that, you know, were the right kind of teammates, that did everything the right way for a long time. And I think that kind of translated in terms of how NFL GMs ended up putting them on their boards. Like I think that Kirby, you know, was really, really positive about the impact that those guys had on the program, and that, you know, you saw those guys come up and be, you know, solidly in the second round, whereas some people thought they might be more, you know, third, fourth round kind of guys. And it's like Kirby, I think, is so trusted amongst NFL GMs at this point, where if he goes to the table and says like, this guy does everything the right way, that everyone believes them, and that's going to help them get where they want to go. So it's just kind of part of that machine that he's built there, where it's like, hey, if you come in and do things the way that we ask you to do them, it's going to pay off for you down the road.
You know, Graham, I look at it like this with those guys that were drafted. If you look at the 8 that were drafted, 7 out of 8, you have a chance to start immediately.
Yeah.
7 out of 8, even going down to SVP, he's got a chance to go into Buffalo and start, because I believe Buffalo is moving a guard over to center who's not a natural center. I mean, Cedric Von Granger. What's that, George?
I think they had Mitch Morse. Did they have Morse?
Yeah, but he's no longer there.
That's what I'm saying. He's gone. He's out of there. And SVP, he's mature.
Yeah.
You know, he was a senior. He's been a leader in the Georgia locker room for a lot of football. You know what I mean? So I think, yeah, you're right.
You got a lot of guys that can start. I think the only person that maybe might be on the fringe is Zion. He's going to have an opportunity, obviously, to get some time down there in Atlanta, which applaud them. It's the first dog they've taken in a long, long time. But You also got some unrestricted free agents out there that are going to log some time. I really think guys like Milton are going to make the team. I think Edwards in Pittsburgh is going to make the team as a running back, maybe a third running back, maybe even, you know, maybe on the practice squad for the first couple of weeks and then bounce up on the roster. Rosemary Jack Saint, all of these guys are going to make the team. And that actually,
I couldn't find Rosemary. Where did he end up going?
Was it Tampa Bay? I think.
No, he went to the Commanders.
Yeah, that's right. Commanders.
He went to Washington. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I heard that he had about a half dozen undrafted free agent offers and he kind of weighed them out, and Washington was the best contract, best situation. Yes. And look, I think at that point, like if you're talking seventh round or undrafted, like you're better off getting to pick where you go.
You're better off definitely going undrafted.
Yeah, and you have one less year until you get to that second contract. Like, I think Roseme's going to play in the NFL for a long time. I've always said that. Like, he just, you know, does a lot of things right. So,
look at Conley. Conley still hanging around.
Yeah, that's wild, isn't it?
Conley still. He like, I looked up in the playoffs. I was like, whoa, it's Conley.
Hey man, you do the right things. You do the right things. You know, hang out with the right people. Make sure that you're one of those guys that's, you know, first in, last out. Keep your nose down. Keep your nose clean. You're always going to get those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Dependable guys.
For sure. All right. So y'all know that, you know, I like to track some of these things statistically year by year in terms of Georgia and how things are going with development and draft. So starting with, let's look at the first two rounds, right? There were six former UGA recruits that were taken in those first two rounds. I'm including AD Mitchell in that because Georgia's the one that, you know, evaluated him when he was a three-star that, you know, there wasn't much buzz around him as a prospect. So the average national recruiting ranking of Brock Bowers, Amarius Mims, Ladd McConkey, Kamari Lassiter, AD Mitchell, and Javon Bullard was 373. In particular, Ladd was ranked as the 1,147th overall player in his class, and Bullard was 526 in his class. So if you take those six guys and look at where they were picked in the draft, their average draft slot was 36th overall. So Georgia turned 373 in terms of their recruiting rank average to 36th overall in the draft. Pretty impressive. And I thought that, you know, we've talked a lot on here about the three-star development in general. You know, McConkey, Bullard, and Mitchell, those guys were all three-star recruits. And on the whole now, you've got Georgia in a spot where since Kirby was hired, I'm counting the 2016 recruiting cycle. I know he came in at the end of that, but those were still, you know, that was still one of his classes. He has brought in 46 three-stars that have gone on to be eligible for the draft, and 16 of those 46 have been drafted. So 34.7% of Kirby's three-star recruits have now been selected in the NFL draft, and the current national average of three-stars who are drafted is 5.7%. So Georgia's three-star development, roughly 6 to 7 times better than your national average. Like, really impressive. You know, there's the development side of it, but there's also, I think, the evaluation side of it, right? Of, yes, Georgia is in on all these blue chip recruits. They're in on some of the best players in the country, but they still aren't leaving any stone unturned. And they're not recruiting off of, you know, On3 or 24/7 or Rivals or whoever's rankings. They're going out and they're evaluating every kid and they're watching all the film. They're doing the work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's impressive, man. It kind of reminds you of, and I know people are going to say, oh, he's bringing up Bama. But remember when Bama was really in its heyday and they were putting out guys in the NFL, crazy amounts of guys. But even those guys that didn't get a lot of time, didn't log a lot of time, still got drafted, still got big-time free agent offers, still were on rosters. That's where Georgia's at right now, with the exception of being even better in terms of, like you just mentioned, Graham, when you're developing two stars, three stars, and you're making those guys elite, like you just mentioned, you know, if you're a recruit, where do you want to go? I mean, you can get money. You can get NIL anywhere. You can log playing time. I've heard coaches come out and say, you know, go somewhere where you can get that immediate playing time. As long as you get the playing time, they're going to see you. But they're also going to see bad habits. They're also going to see lack of skill, lack of development. They're going to see stats like crazy, but they're not seeing anything else that's tangible to that next level. I think at Georgia, it's a little bit different. You're going to see the skill sets. And like we already saw, man, I mean, iron is sharpening iron. When Amarius Mims can get 8 starts and go 18th overall, and people are saying, well, if he had a full year, he'd be in the top 10. It's already telling you a lot that Georgia's producing, Georgia's developing, Georgia's putting guys in their best position to be successful. That's where I'm going.
Yeah. And it's been what the crazy thing about it is it's been, of course, they're getting more blue chips than they have at some points in the past. I can't say in the whole past because they've always gotten blue chips, but
right.
They're getting a lot of blue chips now. But Georgia has been like what you said for a while now. They just put out quality football players,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the field and for the most part off the field as well. You know, they typically get really good guys. We've had, you know, a few guys over the years, handful of guys over the last, I don't know, a lot of years getting a little trouble here and there. But, you know, for the most part, you get really good, sound, solid football players with really good football character and good personal character as nice. Well. And they're continuing to keep that going now with Coach Smart and that staff.
Facts.
Yeah. I think what's interesting too is, you know, if you look at this last recruiting class that Georgia brought in, this 2024 class, like there are the, you know, there's the 5-star guys that they got and all that. But like, dude, there's some kind of, you know, project style sort of freaks in there. Like, you know, I mean, like the 5-stars are 5-stars, right? KJ Bolden, Justin Williams, Chris Cole ended up a 5-star, but like you're talking about a kid who is almost 6'4" and he runs, you know, a sub 11 second 100 meter. He played safety for most of his high school career. And now he's on his way to like 225. And we saw him on G-Day as an early enrollee. Like he's already doing what Jalen Walker's doing, where he's rushing off the edge and he's playing inside linebacker and he looks good in coverage. And like, you know, there's all these freaky guys like at the end of their class though. Like, I mean, they brought in this kid from North Carolina. What's his name? Nnamdi Ogboko. I saw him on G-Day down on the field. That dude's got the biggest legs I've ever seen on a TV. And like, he's like he's a legit 340 and he's out there. The Quintavious Johnson kid, who was a 3-star in this class, like he's 6'4" and he was playing quarterback last year at Mays High School in Atlanta at 270 pounds, like as a Wildcat style quarterback. Like they've just got these athletic guys that, you know, I think could play multiple positions in some cases, depending on how their bodies develop. But, it does remind me, Lamar, to your point, of sort of back in that day with Bama when they were really at their apex kind of in the mid-2010s to late-2010s. You know, like O.J. Howard just was sort of stashed there on their roster and wasn't featured very much. And then in a national championship game against Clemson, they roll him out and he's got like, you know, 150 yards and 2 touchdowns receiving and, you know, just kind of like they were able to not really use them all year and then bust them out in a big game and surprise Clemson schematically with them. Like Georgia's kind of trending in that direction somewhat where there's these freaky guys on the roster that the average college football fan, or even in some cases, the average Georgia fan probably doesn't even know about yet, but you know, you're going to see him flash in some game, maybe in 2024 or 2025, and then all of a sudden you'll know who he is. So I think it's really impressive that Georgia's doing this, you know, to kind of tie this into the portal a little bit. Like, we just saw the spring portal window kind of come and go. And I'm not saying the players that entered the portal aren't nice players and aren't talented kids, because they are, and they will help somebody's program. But I don't think Georgia really lost anybody that they were super worried about losing, or that they thought was going to be a major contributor for them this year. Mm-hmm. And they managed that while still bringing in this number one class from 2024. Like, they are mm-hmm. still stacking, you know, years and years worth of talent on the two deep and the three deep in this NIL era. And like, that development, to your point, that they're selling of come in and do the right way, it is enough for these kids to say, I'm going to wait my turn to play, and I'm going to wait to make my real dollars in the NFL. And I'm going to trust Kirby and the staff that he's assembled, and the whole apparatus, the nutrition, the strength, all of that to max out my potential. And I think the proof is in the pudding. Like, they are doing that year after year. And even in this draft, which felt like slow for my Georgia standards, to have eight guys after having, I think, 15 in 2022 and 10 in 2023, like, mm-hmm. it's still, you know, you still had five guys that were current Georgia players in the first two rounds, six if you count AD as a recruit in the first two rounds. Like, there's still, you know, a great advertisement for UGA. But what was interesting about seeing only eight go was, it did make me think, like, what does this mean for this next team? You know, because there was a lot of guys who I think would have been draft picks if they had gone out, and they decided not to.
Yeah, right. They got a lot of talent left. I think someone put up a graphic about 40 some odd percent of the 22 classes has transferred. But I looked at, you know, no slighting is who transferred, but I looked at who transferred versus who was left, and there's a theme there. Guys, let me tell you something. The guys who were left, it was like minimum maybe 6-7 draft picks left from that class.
Facts.
Like, that's a whole, like, that's some school's whole draft class. Good schools, you know, just from that class alone, that 22 is still like 6 draft picks on that, from that group that's left, at minimum. And like 3 of them may be first round, probably first round starts would be first round. Mm-hmm. Who else was in that group? I'm gonna look it up right now because somebody sent it to a group chat.
Talking about Jordan's 2020 class?
Yeah, like all the guys that left. They were talking about all the transfers. So 48% of the class transferred out. Who's left? Bell is left, draft pick. We don't know anything about Drew Bobo yet. He hasn't been playing. Oscar Delp, he'll probably get drafted. Everett, mm-hmm. drafted. Green, drafted. Robinson, if healthy, drafted. Spearhead, he didn't jump into
He's still around, but
yeah,
I don't think he's a draft pick, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Starks, draft pick. We don't know anything about Stockton yet. Ja'Cory Thomas. What number is he now?
Possibly he'll be in the conversation to play significant, if not starting, snaps at safety this year.
He's one of those guys that could probably get an undrafted free agent type situation.
We haven't had the chance to see a whole lot of Thorson, but he's had some really good.
Oh, he's getting in.
He had against Tennessee.
Yeah,
that's all you need to know. That 75-yard coffin corner.
Yeah. So you got Thorson, a pick, or at least he'll play. Then you got Walker. He'll get drafted. And then lastly, you got Michael Williams. He'll get drafted. That's who's left out of that class.
You still got Julian Humphrey, too. Yeah.
Yes, Humphrey's there. That's who's left. You know what I mean? Like, we hold on to ballers.
It actually brings me to something, George.
A whole lot of ballers just leaving the program. We had, you know, my guy that went to the Jets. You know, he was a baller. You know, it worked out for him. You know, he was behind a lot of heat. He was behind a lot of
Jermaine Johnson.
You know what I mean? And what's my guy that went to Miami? You know, he's playing good ball in the NFL. The DB.
He's playing for the Bears.
Tyreek Stevenson.
Yeah, he was a baller, but we don't lose many ballers to other schools.
Yeah,
fact. If they left, you know, it is what it is.
All right. Well, hold on a second. Well, this brings me to something because me and a few people got into a conversation on Facebook about this, man. Because everybody was disappointed in all the guys that were hitting the portal. Because Graham, you brought that up. Do you think that it ever comes back to haunt Georgia at any moment? Or at any point in time in the near future of when you're bringing in these top classes, like let's just say the 22 class, let's say the 23 class, and you're losing recruits because you're bringing older portal guys into your locker room. Do you think that eventually hurts Georgia, kind of like it's hurting Kentucky now in basketball and Coach Cal left or hadn't got towards Cal?
I'll put it this way. Like, if you look at the, like Lamar said, like, there's not that many guys that leave that we're going to play. The ones that do are, you know, I mean, like, you look at a guy like, what's his face? Bear Alexander. Like, there was more going on there than football stuff, right? I think it hurt Georgia last year when you got to that Alabama game and you had Brock and Ladd hurt. You had Ra-Ra out of the game, and you didn't have A.D. Mitchell. You know, like, that hurt Georgia. But he didn't leave because he was afraid of what was recruited around him or anybody coming in the portal. You know, he left for other reasons. So I think at the end of the day, like, the whole program has always been built on you compete in practice and you earn your spot on the roster in practice. And if a guy is not willing to do that and, like, feels like, you know, I'm going to go to USC, for example, because they're going to pay me 10 times the NIL money and they're going to promise me a starting job and no one's going to be on my ass and practice every day and I can just go out and play and do my thing. Like, that might be a better fit for that individual, but is that really a Georgia guy to begin with? Probably not. You know, that's not to say that he's not a talented kid, but was he going to be like a real true fit with what Georgia does in their locker room culture? I doubt it. But a lot of this, man, is just like, yeah, you bring in these kids from high school and you evaluate them the best that you can at that point. But then when you get them in your program, you really get to evaluate everybody. And like, Georgia just signed a crazy DB class, man. They just signed Ellis Robinson, number one corner. DeMelo Jones, top five corner. I think On Three ended up making him a five-star by the end of the cycle. They sign KJ Bolden at safety. Like, those are three guys that will start in college almost certainly for Georgia and probably for multiple years. At the same time that's happening, you saw Daniel Harris and Julian Humphrey both, you know, say that they were hitting the portal. And in the end, neither of those guys left. And both those guys are going to probably contribute, if not start, at times this year in 2024. So I think Georgia's got it kind of figured out where it's like they bring you in and they get a chance to see you in person. And if they think that you're going to be a really good player for them, then in most cases they're going to do what they can and what they need to do to keep you. You're not going to keep everybody, but like this past portal cycle, and I include back in December in this as well, I can't really find a name that Georgia lost this offseason to the portal that I think will come back and haunt them in 2024. where they're going to say, oh, man.
Well, let me rephrase this another way. Not necessarily hurt by guys leaving the program, but eventually hurt recruiting as a whole. Like, for example, I'm a four-star, I'm a five-star kid, and I say, you know what, I'm going to go to Georgia, and I don't mind waiting my time. I don't mind waiting at all. I know I'm next man up. I'm going to put in the work. I know I'm going to do the work. And then all of a sudden, here comes Joey X from X school who portals in. He's a senior, or he's a highly rated junior, and all of a sudden he's playing over top of me. I think a lot of people have rubbed a lot of fans the wrong way by looking at that, saying, well, wait a minute, you're bringing in an ETN, you're bringing in all these wide receivers, all these older wide receivers, the younger guys aren't playing, guys like, who's the kid from out of Florida that portaled?
Tyler Williams.
Yeah, like Tyler Williams. People were excited to see what he could do, but he portals out. I mean, do you think that eventually hurts recruiting? Do you think it eventually hurts the process where a kid says, well, you know what, I really have a fair shot, or you can just, recruit over me with somebody out of the portal?
You gotta be able to compete, man. It's as simple as that. You want competitors.
Facts.
At the end of the day, when you have competitors in your program, you're better off. Period. You want talent, of course, and you're Georgia, so you're gonna have talent. You're going to get to pick from more talent than most people. So if they're in your building, whether they're a 3-star or 5-star, they're talented. And it's always talented kids chomping at the bit to play for Georgia. So if you don't want anybody, if you don't want guys on your team that don't want to compete. So as long as they got spot, they're not going to be sitting around with slots open, like, man, we need to fill this spot. These guys wish they could play for Georgia. Competitors.
Yeah.
So
I don't worry about what's that. Interesting is you keep seeing guys who come out of high school and they make decisions based on NIL or someone promising them playing time, and they go somewhere and they play really well for a year, and they realize, like, man, like, I can get more out of my talent at a place like Georgia, or I can go to a place like Georgia and compete for national titles. So, I mean, that door swings both ways, of course. But the question I would ask you, George, is, like, how many true alpha dog, like, best player in the position room type guys were you around in college or in the pros who ever thought, like, oh, I can't win the job, ever thought, like, I'm not going to win the job if I compete? Like, the best players,
because you didn't have a choice,
to know they're the best.
That choice can be a positive, because if you got a guy sitting there with a choice and they choose to compete, you got you a dog. You know what I mean? As opposed to not having a choice, you're going to be there anyway. You know what I mean? And right. So if you with the choice, and if you got a choice and you got kids that choose to stay and compete, you got you something there. You know what I mean? But yeah, everybody thinks they're the guy. And back in the day, you had to sit there and prove that you were the guy. Now you can bounce. You know what I mean? But the ones that think they are, how the kids say now, him, the guys that think they're him, they're gonna compete. They don't care, like, they're gonna wait their turn if it doesn't work out this time, but they're gonna compete. They're gonna be at practice competing. And, like, that's just how we did it. We knew. We talk about it all the time, man. Like, if I beat you, we're definitely going again. You know what I'm saying? If you beat me, we definitely got to go a third time. Me and my friends talk about this all the time. Like, so we're definitely – in a drill, we're going no less than 3 times against each other. You know what I mean? Because I can't let you – nobody wants to end on a loss. you know, that breeds competition. You know what I mean? And we didn't have a choice. You either competed, and you either competed for time, or you just sat the bench. It was just really that. It's really and dry bag, man.
Well, I mean, I'll say this too, Lamar. Like, if you look at Georgia and how they've used the portal, I have yet to see them use the portal in a position room where, you know, they got guys that are ready to perform up to the standard that they need to perform at to go win national titles. Like, we, you know, collectively, I think the media and fans and everybody kind of expected them to look to add some bodies to that defensive line room this spring. And there were some guys that hit the portal at that position, whether that be the kid from Michigan State, the guy that was a freshman All-American at TCU, Williams, who LSU and Oklahoma are fighting over. Like, there were good tackles in the portal over the last couple of weeks. And clearly, you know, the combination of what they saw from that room over spring practice, coupled with, you know, Michael and Kristen Miller and all these big names, you know, staying, like, that made them feel like they were good there. So is it, you know, crappy for some of these kids that, like, they come to Georgia and it doesn't work out? Sure, it is. But also, I have not seen Georgia go out and, you know, recruit over these guys if the guys were good enough to go and win titles with. And I mean, that, you know, receiving is tricky because, you know, you got four of them on the field in a lot of cases, and you need to have at least 8 to 10, and then you have injuries and all that. So it's like, you need that depth in that room. But I mean, like Rashada that just came in, let's be honest, man. Like, Gunnar Stockton is a great kid. I think he does everything the right way, but every time we've seen him so far, I have yet to see him and say, like, this guy is ready to go and run the offense at the level that Georgia needs to run an offense to compete for titles. Kirby Smart just got a raise today to, you know, $13 million a year. Like, that's, you know, they don't pay him that to make people's feelings great. And I mean, I think he cares about these kids a lot more than people realize. And, you know, when it's practice time, like, he puts his asshole hat on because that's what you got to do. But, you know, he wants the best for these kids, but it is also his responsibility to go and win football games. And the reality is just that not everybody that you recruit is going to cut the mustard. And it's always been that way. You know, it's never been 100% hit rate in recruiting. And especially when you got guys leaving, you do have a responsibility to maximize the value of all 85 scholarships that you have available to you as a football coach right now.
When you at this level of football, that in a big time program like that, point blank, you want guys that have a shot to play on Sunday. Period. Everybody that hits the field for you, not every one of them is going to play on Sunday, but you want more of those guys than not. You know what I mean? And those guys, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, off the bat, you know what I mean? No matter how young they are, you know what I mean? One of my best friends, I trust his, you know, his eye for talent. He's a high school coach. By the way, he says the Mello Jones is him. He said him. He's like that. But anyway, he told me about what's my guy, Sunshine, Trevor Lawrence. He told me about him as like a freshman. He was like, that kid is gonna play in the NFL. I think he was like a freshman. It's like that's what they look like. And you know, I went to see him play. He was probably a junior by then, and I was like, yes, that's what they look like, because I was in scouting by then. And like, yeah, that's what they look like. Coach Smart knows what they look like, you know. And if he can't get them, he's gonna get some guys that he can win with. But I promise you, he'd rather have guys that got to have a shot to play on Sunday. And if you don't, you know, that's fine. You might find you, a spot on the team where you can help out, you know, but if they have a chance to get guys that are going to play on Sunday, you know, that's what they're going to do. You know what I mean? So there's no, you know, you look at a guy like Rashada. Yes, you're going to go after that type of dude. Listen, it's no slight to Gunner. But, you know, you look at the guys, you know what I mean?
Side by side.
There are guys that look that have it, you know, there's a lot to go into playing elite football and definitely playing the NFL, you know, than other than physical, you know what I mean? But when you look at the package, you want a lot more of those, you know, than anything else.
I think the other thing too is that you can't assume these guys are all going to develop on the timeline that you need them to. Fact. I mean, like I think Georgia had, you know, they had Marvin Jones Jr. in that edge room last year, mm-hmm. and the assumption was that we know that we trust Chaz to do the right things, and that he is going to play all of his, you know, assignments the way that he's coached to do it. And he did that all year. And I think that, you know, there was a lot of plays that people maybe blame Chaz for that were really on the linebackers. And you know, mm-hmm. I don't want to go all the way down that wormhole, obviously, but Marvin Jones Jr. was the 5-star top 10 overall recruit with 6'6" and the NFL DNA and all of that stuff. Right. And he was given ample opportunity both on the field and in practice to assert himself and take that position. And he never could do it, right? And it haunted Georgia. It haunted Georgia, you know, when you came to Alabama. And I think that, like, you look at that and you look at Rashada and Gunner, right? Like, Gunner might develop the way that Carson did. He might be a late bloomer who turns into – you know, a one-day high-round draft pick. It's not out of the question. But until it happens, you can't assume it's going to. And I think that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you go. I was cutting you off.
I was going to say, the other thing is the 17-game potential schedule is a whole different animal. And you look at what happened to Florida State last year, where their whole season was derailed by one injury. And the way that changed the perception of their entire team. And I think that people took notice of that, and Kirby's included in that. And, you know, I don't know who's going to be the backup when we get to October, whether that's Carson or Rashada or whatever, but I know that, you know, you got a much better chance of one of two hitting than you do of one of one hitting. One of those guys, or Puglisi, is probably going to hit and be a capable backup who can run the offense. Got to have that.
What I was going to say, it's kind of piggybacks a little bit off on what you were saying, is, yeah, sometimes you can't wait to see if guys are going to develop, you know, at certain positions. You know what I mean? You have guys, and when you have a chance to upgrade, Georgia is in a luxury position. They have the luxury of replacing you. They also have the pressure of replacing you.
They have the rich people problems.
They have the pressure of needing to win. And they have the pressure of needing to win, and they have the luxury of being able to replace those that do not help you win. And so some guys get caught up in the shuffle.
That's right. No, and I think they also have the luxury, so to speak, of they're not going to be held hostage by anybody.
Like, no.
There's going to be these kids who are like, well, I'm a year older now, so I should be making, you know, more NIL money or whatever it is. And it's like, man, you know, you can't pay third stringers like they're stars, and you can't pay starters like they're stars. You know, it's like Georgia doesn't have anybody on its roster right now that couldn't go and probably make more somewhere else. But, you know, yeah. those guys want to play for championships, and they want to be developed for the NFL. And so, you know, they make that value judgment. But that's the other side of this too, is just like, you can't, you know, they're not going to play games with everybody. I'm not saying all the kids that leave by any means it's about NIL or anything like that, but some of them look around and say, hey man, like, I'm not going to play here for at least another year to 2 years, if ever. And I could go make more money somewhere, you know, and somebody will
Oh, that's a business decision.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it's a career decision too, because it's like, right, like you said, like, you do have to put stuff on tape. But some of these guys that went to Purdue and Syracuse this offseason, like, they're good players. Like, I thought Yazeed Haynes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yazeed Haynes was going to be a really good receiver for Georgia at some point. You know, like, he mm-hmm. made enough plays and practices to where that ability was there, but the consistency hadn't been developed yet. He'll shine at Syracuse. But the other thing too is, like, some of those guys will bounce down a level and they'll have a really good year to show everybody what they can do. And then in 12 months, they'll be bouncing back up to, you know, an Ohio State or a playoff contender type school. So I don't fault any of them for using it to their advantage. Right. And I hope for their sake that they do make Georgia, you know, at some point down the road, be like, ah, man, maybe we should have kept him. Cause look, he's, you know, he's got 850 receiving yards in the ACC now or whatever it is. But Georgia is going to do what they need to do to balance that pendulum between winning now and also stacking talent that, you know, is going to develop and win later. And not everybody is on that plan and wants to be on that plan. And also, it's just like, not everybody is guaranteed, if they wait for 3 years or 4 years to start. It just doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
You also got to look at it like Mike Tomlin said, with the, you know, the quarterback competition in Pittsburgh. Russell Wilson has pole position. Georgia has pole position. I mean, two national championships in the last 3 years. You already got this jump. You got the best coach in college football. You've been a recruiting monster ever since he's gotten there. You've got two national championships. You got a guy that's maybe going to win the Heisman Trophy next year. You're in pole position. So when you actually look at the guys that leave, and then Georgia has their pick of the litter who comes in, I mean, you're already in, you know, leading the race. The only thing it really comes down to is going to come down to NIL money, whether you get that superior talent. But at the same time, it goes back to what George said. If you're not Georgia material, you're just not Georgia material anyway. You know what I mean? They're going to recruit a certain style of guy, type of guy. And some of these guys, they even lose, quote unquote lose. They're not losing them. They're letting that guy go because he's not a culture guy. Or he's that me guy, you know, me first guy. So, hey, they're in pole position. That's all I got to say. But there's a guy that's doing it. In my opinion, he's doing it all wrong, man. And then we just got to talk about that quickly before we head out. Because two guys said, well, one, that's Coach Prime, right? I mean, I don't even know what is on his mind. I don't know what he's thinking about being a head coach of a college football program.
Oh, man, I didn't know we were going to get into this.
Yeah, he's going after a kid. But then Keon Coleman, I got words for him.
Oh, God.
If Trey was on the show, Trey would say he want to throw them hands because – boys off his rocker. What are they saying? What? He said, what?
What's your thoughts, Graham? You can go Deion, you can go Keon.
I think, your thoughts. All right. So I'll start with Keon Coleman, okay?
I was about to say he's the easiest to get out of the way.
Yeah, let's just get that one out of the way. We can talk about the complicated dynamics of Prime. All right. So with your boy Keon Coleman, right? It's funny that you put SFU instead of FSU there. If you put a little T in there between the S and F, you might have something to work with. With Coleman, it's pretty simple, okay? Like, everybody, I think at some point in their life, they were in school or they ran into somebody at a bar. Whether you're a male or a female or whatever, you ran into someone in your life at some point who was an attractive individual. And, you know, maybe there was a little flirtatious action that happened there, but you never quite asked that person out. You know, maybe they had something else going on. Maybe you had something else going on. Just the timing wasn't right. But, you know, I think there's times where people don't ask somebody out because they're afraid of being told no. And if you don't ever ask that question, then you can never be rejected, right? I think that Keon Coleman is the same way, man. Like, if you don't ever play in the game, then you can always tell yourself that it would have been different if you had. Right? And Keon Coleman, I hate to tell you this, bro, but you did play in some games in, you know, the weeks leading up to the Orange Bowl. Like, you did play against Florida. You did play against all these teams. And y'all put up like 3-point-something yards a play against a 91st-ranked Florida defense and scored 24 points and were losing going into the fourth quarter against them too. So it's not like, you know, they were lighting the world on fire coming into that. I think the crazy part about it is that, you know, we didn't hear him be like, oh, if Jordan hadn't gotten hurt and, you know, we had our full roster that was healthy, then I think we beat him. It was like, no, we would have just beat him with, you know, Tate Rodemaker or whoever the hell they would have ran out there at quarterback. Like, my guy had – let's look at the end of the season. Against Florida, he had 6 targets with 1 reception for 24 yards. Against Louisville, he was targeted 7 times, and he did pull down 4 catches, but they only added up to 19 yards, 4.8 yards a catch for Mr. Coleman. I'm not a physics guy. I'm not like an advanced mathematics major, but I do not think that, you know, 19 yards or 24 yards of receiving would have eclipse that 60-point gap that we saw in the Orange Bowl. And, like, you know, I think FSU fans and FSU players, they get to live under the very convenient excuse of, you know, we weren't asked to the prom, but we didn't want to go anyways. And they never have to admit that, you know, maybe that date just didn't want to go with them. And I think that FSU – It's wonderful for their fans because they get to always just sit here and, you know, pound that table and talk about how they were wronged and all of that. And the truth of the matter is that if they had been put in the college football playoff, even without Georgia in that college football playoff, they would have had their ass whooped up and down the field by any of the teams they could have played. Yeah, they would have gotten boat raced because their quarterback was hurt. You know, I thought they were a good team before Jordan Travis got hurt. I still don't think they would have stayed within, you know, 2 touchdowns of Georgia, even at their best version of themselves. But this idea of like, oh, you know, I didn't play because they lost in the SEC championship. And, you know, I'm not going to take any responsibility for my actions. I'm just going to say that it's Georgia's fault because, you know, we didn't get to go to the play. Like, man, dude, that is some convoluted gymnastics. Bruh. Like, do you it's crazy.
He didn't even understand what he said. I mean, first of all, he stepped out of not playing to save himself from getting injured, looking at the future. Those same dogs on the other sideline that got drafted on this past week, they all played. The only ones that didn't play were guys that were fully injured, like a Mims, you know, and Brock. You know, he didn't have to show anything else. I mean, that was it. But they all played. So I don't, you know, this whole thing of, well, you know, we didn't want to play. I mean, y'all didn't want to play us, and then Georgia went out there and then lost, and you know, then they couldn't, you know, fight the man anyway. Like he's, I don't know what's up with homeboy, but he's lost, completely lost. And they would have gotten boat race, like you just mentioned, Graham.
Boat race. Yeah.
You got anything on it?
I don't have much to say because I'm going to keep it real with you. I pieced together everything that he said, you know, just the clips here and there and seeing tweets and stuff, because I knew the gist of what he said and I didn't want to hear that. Yes. Like real talk. I never pressed play and watched the whole thing because I knew what it was about and it sounded like a crock up.
Yeah, he was.
That wasn't. I knew what he meant, and I understood what folks were saying. And like, he's totally out of bounds on that one.
Well, you know, I will say this:
They had some good players missing, man. Put it like this: the only people that would have concerned me had they played would have been Fisk and Verse. Yes. You know, those were real dogs, you know, to me. You know, anybody else, I wouldn't have been scared of that quarterback, wouldn't have been scared of Coleman, whoever else was out, never would have concerned me. You know what I mean? They had two dogs up front that played really hard and had good production. Those are only guys that would have concerned me. But they don't score points. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like they don't like they would have been, you know, they would have been in trouble. I don't care who played.
Yeah. Well, when we did our Orange Bowl preview before that, I said this will be a culture win for the University of Georgia. Like this will be, you even clipped it and put it on TikTok or whatever. But I said, like, you know, they're going to show up and they're going to play a football game because the University of Georgia is playing a football game and they care about the University of Georgia and they care about their teammates. Florida State, you know, they assembled kind of a mercenary army out of the transfer portal. And when it came down to, you know, all year long, people that were close to that program said, if, you know, this team has this kind of playoff or bust mentality about it, and if they lose a game or two to where that goal is suddenly off the table, watch out because it could all fall apart quickly. And it, you know, obviously they went undefeated in the regular season, but once that was off the table, nobody really gave a shit anymore.
Nope.
And that's their right. That is their right. But don't come back and blame that on other, you know, blame that on somebody else. If you didn't want to play, you didn't want to play. Just take responsibility for your own decision.
Exactly. All right, man. Before we go,
just a little quick shot.
It's a little quick shot. Quick thoughts on Prime. I mean, I think he's out of pocket. I love what he quote unquote is trying to do with Colorado, but bruh, it's so apparent right now that it's just about you. It's just about your son. It's just about Travis, and I believe he dips. But come on, man. Like, you can't go after another kid on.
Yeah. Let me get mine out of the way. Let me just get mine out of the way, man. I think,
let's hear it.
You know, first of all, we all grew up on Prime. You know, I wanted to see him do well. I wanted to see him do well out there, you know, and quite frankly, you know, it helps. Everybody got to be their own man, but perception wise, if he does well, it helps with other black coaches getting shots. It helps with former players getting shots to coach and do their passion. There's a lot of former players that would love to coach, you know, very passionate about it. You know what I mean? A lot of people are scared of that. And so I'm trying to get my Oh, I'm back in there. So I want him to do well. The problem with it is I don't know what he's trying to. I have no idea what his aim is, and like, is this calculated? Does he know what he's doing? Because to me, some of the things he's doing, except and especially this past week, they don't look good. And it's only self-serving. But the problem with that is Prime, he's good with or without Colorado. He's got to think about the bigger picture for other people, including his son. You know, and of course now Shadur, he has to be his own man too. He has some responsibility in that too, but it's all together. You know, you have to think about it's not all about you. And I'm not talking about the flash and the glitch. You know, Prime's gonna be Prime. They knew when they hired Prime, this is what they got with it. And it hasn't paid out on the field, but it's paid some dividends. Do not get that twisted. Mm-hmm. It's paid some dividends in that area, in that city, you know. But so they knew that. They knew what they were getting with that. But he has to understand that his antics affect people other than him. You know what I mean? Like, if Shadur ends up being marginal, those answers going to affect him. You know,
yeah.
if he ends up being LaMelo Ball, it won't. You know, he's undeniable talent. You know what I mean? So right. You know, because people like to compare him to like what LaVar was doing. Yes, great. You know, and with the same way with LaVar. I didn't have a lot of issue with LaVar. I'm reading to it a little more than surface. Mm-hmm. You know, some stuff he did was wild, you know, but I was trying to see past all of that. You know what I mean? But if you got kids that are marginal, that can affect them. It's like, why would I want to deal with all that with a marginal kid? You know what right. I mean? And you don't, you know, Shadur has to play very well this year to cement himself in the first round. You know what I mean? Or if he wants to go in the top half of the first round, his dad thinks he's a top five player. We shall see what it is. A lot can happen in a year. So I'm not one to be like, your kid ain't no top five player. I wouldn't do that because a lot of people go top five that I know what a Drake May was, you know? So, so I'm not going to be like, you know, Shadur, you know, calm down. You ain't no top five player. I have no idea right now. But, you know, you want to do everything. You want to leave no doubt when it comes to the people that are looking at you. You know, and that's the problem. That's the issue I had with his response to the kid. You know, it just doesn't look right as being a leader. Like neither one of the Sanders men's, you know, that got involved with stuff last week showed leadership qualities that I would love to see exhibited. That's the problem I have, you know, because I want them both to do well. And to me, now, granted, we have a very short attention span in this country. By next fall, by this fall and next April, you know, all could be forgotten and forgiven, you know, but for right now, it doesn't look well in a leadership role in both positions that those men are in are leadership positions. And that's the issue I have. I don't have no issue with Shadur holding his watch up. I don't have an issue with the deals he's getting. You know, he's like, they're stars. You know, that's, stars get that. They've always have, you know, but I want to see you, you know, I'm not hating on you. I want to see you be your best. You and those moments from those two men this weekend, I don't think it did them any favors.
I agree. I think that's well said. And, you know, you hit a lot of the points that I kind of had on my mind. I think for me, the thing that bothers me about it is that, you know, Prime is a celebrity now. He's famous. You know, like you said, like, we grew up on Deion. I mean, like, I remember, you know, seeing a picture of him wearing a Braves hat on the sidelines in his jersey and pads with the Atlanta Falcons and thinking that was the coolest shit I had ever seen in my life. You know, it's like, this dude's out playing both sports at a high level. What bothers me is that, you know, everybody starts somewhere, and Deion was a really good player in college. He was a really good player in the pros, but he still, you know, came from somewhere where he wasn't always famous. You know, he wasn't born into this. And I am a believer in, you know, people who make it doing what they can to bring other people along and to build other people up. And with the platform that he has and the position that he has, I think he has an opportunity to do that in a really unique and impactful way. Dragging a kid who left your program through the mud is not a good look. It's just, he's an 18-year-old kid. You know, let him, you know, let him say things. If you think it's petty, if you think it's dishonest, whatever, you still don't, you know, you don't see coaches come down and respond on that level and get into social media wars with kids. And, you know, yesterday he's out like tweeting stats from a, you know, it wasn't even the kid who played on his roster. It was a teammate of the guy who transferred from Colorado. And this kid left Colorado. He went to Austin Peay, where he was a freshman All-American. And now he's transferred back up to UTEP. And I think the kid's a pretty good player. And there's some irony to it because Colorado probably could have used him last year, but he was hurt in the time leading up to when he transferred out of Boulder. So, you know, that kid's teammate and friend is trying to defend him, and you've got Deion Sanders with how many, let's see, how many followers does he have on Twitter? Like
probably about
1.8 million followers, 1.8 million followers talking about his stats. And then you got Shador on Twitter Spaces yesterday, like, you know, getting on Spaces to talk about this beef and talk about who did what and all that. Like, it's just not a good look. It's not what, you know, I think any of them should be focused on. To your point, George, like, we just saw Spencer Rattler fall in the draft because of a documentary that he did when he was 17 years old and how he acted in that. And that created character concerns for the NFL. So if you think that, you know, this isn't going to be looked at or thought about by GMs, I think you're underestimating just how deep they look at everything in these kids' lives. Mm-hmm. But
trust me.
What really kind of like set the, I still was just like, this is petty back and forth. What really bothered me last night was I was wrapping up my evening and I was writing some stuff for the site, and I looked on Twitter and he posted a tweet, and it had a Bible verse from the second book of Samuel that says, "I pursued my enemies and crushed them. I did not turn back till they were destroyed. I crushed them completely and they could not rise. They fell beneath my feet." And with that, there was this video and it was like a Colorado hype video, but it had the Scarface "Say Hello to the Bad Guy" monologue under it. And it was like, all right, man, we got the Bible and we got Scarface and we got the Colorado Buffaloes are apparently the nexus of those two things. And, you know, the Book of Samuel is about like the story of David and slaying Goliath and becoming the king and all of that. And, you know, David is like persecuted for many years in here. And it's like, is Deion trying to compare, you know, these 18-year-old kids that are saying things to him about him in the media, saying things about their experience to like being persecuted, you know? And what hit me in all of this is like, this man is an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. And those two things are not going to live well together. And it is a recipe for doing, you know, embarrassing shit online. And I mean, the one kid, McLean Cormani, when he left, he made the statement of like, "I didn't want to play for clicks anymore." Like, I know enough stories about Cormani and McLean to say, like, I don't think he was doing everything perfect while he was in Boulder, but there is some of this stuff where it's just like not everything has to be turned into a form of media. You know, not everything has to turn into a post or a tweet or a video clip or a like or, you know, whatever it is. And I think that you saw the mom of a five-star wide receiver recruit, I think, in the 25 or 26 class, like, come out and be like, this is disgusting. And, you know, I'm really glad that my son lifts up his teammates instead of, like, tearing down people. And I think that's kind of the right sentiment. Ooh, is just right. I hope that they use that platform to build people up and to bring people with.
I'm truly confused. I'm like, where's the awareness? Is there severe lack of awareness going on here, or don't care, or are you Teflon? Do you know that you're Teflon?
You know, or what?
Are you assuming that you're Teflon?
It goes back to what you said, though. It goes back to what you said. Prime was going to be Prime, and that's what he's being. And he's like, yeah. It goes, you know, he's arrogant, he's brash. You know, look, I'm a believer. He's a believer. So, look, everybody's on their own journey. So, you know, people always say he's a little bit over the top. He's too flashy. He's too this. Look, that's who he is. He'll dump some of that down. But when it comes to this, man, that's just him. And he's going to say things. He's going to do things. He's going to do things the way that he wants to do them. But the most hurtful part of this is that this is really for his kid. This is for his guys. Like you just said, you called him LeVar Ball. He's LeVar Ball trying to get his son to be a top flight quarterback that goes into the NFL, that wins championships and continues the family line. And it's a lot of selfishness, because does he even talk about the other son, the safety?
Nobody else on the team.
Yeah.
Except for Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter's like an adopted kid.
Yeah.
And Travis is a stud. Like, yeah. Travis is gonna be Travis without him.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not a good look. And I wonder, like, where's the awareness here? Unless your goal is to, if you could give a flip about the program, fine then. But this is not the way to build the program that's going to compete. It's not. Nobody's going to want their kid to go there unless they have to. You know what I mean? Like, they see, like, people see how you treat others, and they got to decide, do they want that for their kids? Mm-hmm. And you know, I just don't think he's using a lot of awareness here and making the right choices as it pertains to what his job title is. You know, LeVar Ball is not the head coach or GM or nothing. Like, that's different. LeVar Ball, he talking trash. He doing what he's doing to build the Ball brand up. And to a degree, it worked for him. You know, but Deion has a program to run, you know, and, you know, like I said before, I'm room for him to do it the right way, because him doing it the right way, it means a lot more than just for him.
Exactly.
But right now, like this past week, you know, I can't say I'm a Deion stan or, you know, anyway, you know, I've been critical in the past. I can't say I'm a stan, but I did want him to do this the right way. Mm-hmm. And I don't think from what I know in my experience as a player, you know, as a scout, as a, you know, I've done coaching fellowships, I've seen every part of this game, and it's, you can't act, you, there's a certain way you can't, you don't want to act like what's been happening. I know you don't need nobody. That's fine. But the NFL, college football doesn't need Deion. The NFL doesn't need Deion. The NFL doesn't need none of Deion's kids. You know what I mean? It's just it's too much talent out there. They're not like that check, them checks are cash for the NFL long before the seasons start. It's called TV. You know, they need no one, you know, as far as on that field. And they've proven to you they don't care. Nice. Your neck can fall off and they're moving on to the next thing. You know, they don't need anybody. So if you're trying to get in, you might want to do everything the right way. You know what I mean? Because they're not missing out. If you crash out, they don't care.
I think the thing that disappoints me too is that Deion, it seemed like the way he's operated at Colorado, where he's so transfer portal heavy, and you know, he doesn't go and visit high school recruits because he thinks it's not fair to some people that comes to their school and not others. Doing that, and then the fact that you know he only signed, I think, 8 kids out of high school last year, and you got a situation where his kids are going to be done after this year. I think if you would ask me maybe 2 months into last season, where is Deion Sanders going to be in 2025 or 2026? I would have said, you know, he keeps kind of rolling in a somewhat positive direction at Colorado. And when his kids are gone and Travis Hunter is gone, he will springboard that into a big time job somewhere. You know, I'm not talking about like blue blood, but I like a level under that. And I know that he was very seriously considered as a candidate at one SEC school that was in the middle of a coaching search a couple of years ago. And they liked the assistant hires that the other candidate was willing to make better than what Deion was willing to do. But like Deion, if he had just kind of kept his, you know, kept on the same path that he was on, I think that he could have been in the SEC. He could have, you know, been at a major ACC school. And I think that then you're talking about somebody that really is changing the path and really is like opening doors for other ex players to follow. And he's really challenging the status quo in a way that is interesting and that is working. No athletic director at a major university that is a major brand can sign on for this and you know, have this guy out there representing your brand that's worth hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars. It is a circus. It's just a circus, and you can't do it. And so,
you know what it brings back? Go.
Oh, I was going to say King David never blew a 29-point lead to a 3-1. I don't have anything else to say about it. I'm curious to hear what you guys.
I'll just finish because I need to go. It brings back to me just seeing. I have no idea what the relationship beyond coaching that Kirby had with the guys that got drafted this weekend. This past week, have no idea what their relationship was, but to the outside looking in, the way he talked to each draft pick on Twitter, the way he talked to them, the way he wished them well, the way he addressed them, it's like they were the best kids ever, and that's part of the game. You know what I mean? You know, I'm pretty sure he probably MF'd all of them. You know, when it came time to draft pick, it came time to the draft and they got drafted, you know, nothing but like he gave them tweets like a proud father. And that looks good to parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you talking that, speaking that way of a guy that can do nothing for you anymore. And that's what you want from a head coach. You know what I mean? The thing, that's what you would have liked to have seen that from Coach Prime this past week. You know, just a little humility when it's talking about the kids. we're talking about kids here, it's different. You know, I don't have any issue, you know, if he wants to go back and forth with, you know, coaches, with Dan Lanning. I don't give a flip, man. I'm not sensitive like that. I'm not like, hey, I love a good show. You know what I mean? When it has to do with these kids, though, keep it classy. Keep it classy, you know? Kids didn't write no stories. Kids going to be kids. You know what I mean? They're going to get asked questions, and they're going to answer, and they're going to tell how they feel. You know what I mean? It's your job to be, you know, yeah, the high road ain't fun all the time, but it is what it is. You're going to have to do that sometime.
That's right. I think you criticize, you coach them internally and you criticize them internally. And mm-hmm. like you said, I mean, I can tell you for a fact, Kirby,
I wish him well.
Practice. Yeah. But when it's, you know, on the outside, you protect that kid, you know, you
protect him.
That's the covenant that you enter into with that kid and their family when, you know, you become their coach. On that level, you don't throw kids under the bus, whether it's over a play or a mistake, anything like that. You know, I mean, even with all of the things that went around the Georgia program last year, like, you know, it would have been very easy for Kirby to kind of distance himself from certain players or, you know, play a different tune than he played. Obviously, he was said that these things are unacceptable because they are unacceptable, but you never saw him try to, you know, separate himself from any of those kids. If anything, like, it seemed like, you know, he stood 10 toes down with those guys and said, yes, they made some mistakes and we need to fix those, but it's our responsibility to do that. It's our responsibility to help these guys grow. It's college football.
And it goes both ways. The kids, you know, yeah, they help you too. You know, it's got to be selfish some. That, you know, yeah, he probably does feel a certain way about those kids and loves them and wants them to be great. But also at the same time, he gets something in return for being that. You know what I mean? So, you get a guy like Bullard, who, you know, got in some trouble a couple years ago. You know, he got his punishment, came back, played lights out for the Dogs. Ends up, now he's got a great start on the rest of his life as an NFL football player. You know, it works out that way when you nourish kids.
Yeah. Exactly, man. Well, fellas, I mean, it's been a heck of a night. Welcome back to the show, doing our thing. But anybody else got anything else to say before we get out of here?
None.
No, sir.
About to
right.
Pick up as a charm. Always,
be 100 Sanford. Go Dogs.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dogs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.